show do you do?
It's called Polycast.
On the internet, is it?
Okay, welcome to the 15th episode of Polycast, the official podcast of a Politan civilization site. I'm here with Maki.
Hello.
And Impaler.
Have no fear, Impaler is here.
Impaler, yeah. I'll say Impaler for some reason.
And I'm extra shiny this week.
Ah, yes. Extra shiny Vista.
Extra shiny, oh crap, my old computer went out.
Oh well, what can you do?
We feel for you, Maki.
In case anyone wondering if anyone's missing, we kicked out Dan and Imran. They didn't contribute enough to the show.
Yes, they are fired.
Fired.
You're fired.
Locutus has seized power.
Yes, I did. Muhahaha.
The coup.
Today, a Politan, tomorrow, the world.
Well, maybe you should start small. Take over Sith Fanatics next.
That's actually a good idea.
All your Sith Fanatics are belong to us.
No. Imran disappeared at the last minute. Apparently, had some kind of emergency. The same happened to one of our other guest hosts. So we're down two people. And Dan also isn't here. Nobody really knows why, but he had to go somewhere, do something. He's very secretive about it. There's been a lot of interesting speculation in the forum.
Yes. Number one, I think, was he's getting married.
Yeah. That's not going to happen.
Number two, prison.
That sounds slightly more plausible.
Number three, taking over Sith Fanatics.
Yeah. We don't need them. We're doing fine on our own.
Number four, personally getting to test Beyond the Sword.
Yeah, testing the Dan level, that will probably require some effort.
I was going to say, exactly how does it help to play pre-settler?
They're testing it. They're bringing him in to make sure that the sub-settler level can really be beat by anyone.
This week in the news, we talk about a lot of Beyond the Sword news. We have the release date for the game, and there was an interview with Alex Mantaris, better known as Alexman, on our forums, who is the lead designer and programmer for that game. And, that interview was pulled, but we still managed to get a copy.
In the modcast, we pulled some topics around here, and we talk about how war weariness can bring a lot of us to tears, warmonger or not. Some top 10 tips to get started in Civ from over at CFC. Also from CFC, we talked about what are your little Civ playstyle idiosyncrasies? What are those things you just have to do?
And in the workshop this week, we're looking at Amwa's mod pack for Warlords version 2, large extensive modification collection featuring civilizations, leader heads, buildings, techs, you name it, it's got it. And in the mailbag, we have Night Owl's reaction to our Senate discussion of episode 14, giving some advice to Maki and me as well.
The news?
News.
News.
Oh, well, that brings us into our next topic. What was it? The apparently leaked but then retracted interview?
Yeah, that was kind of a screw-up by Strategy Informer. Apparently they weren't supposed to post that until next month.
Oh.
But we have a copy anyway. Woo-hoo. Thank you, Google Cache.
For Google Cache? I was just about to say.
Yeah, I think the threads on this thing were about 4 or 5 pages long before it was actually retracted, so
yeah.
Everyone knows.
Not really very helpful to pull it at this point.
Yeah, might as well just say, it's closing the barn door after the horse is out,
Cows have gone home.
Yeah. A long time ago. I don't even really get why they're waiting so long. I mean, the game's, if it's going to be released in 2 months, they're pretty much close to going gold right now. And we still haven't seen any real advertising except for this leaked interview.
Yeah, well, it was how many weeks ago they even just told us it was even being made out of the blue. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, and that was pretty late already. It was late March, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, most games are advertised, how many months? 4 or 5 before they're released?
Well, usually it starts a lot sooner.
Hmm. Yeah, I think they've kind of done this with both expansions, been kind of under the radar, and all of a sudden, oh, look, expansion.
Yeah, that's true. Warlords was also announced very, very late, but at least got some exposure at E3. But of course, that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm, yes. Mm. Too bad. Yeah. One of my great life's goals now, unachievable.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we'll get something like E3 again in the future. But...
Go E4!
E4. The next evolution of E3? Oh, I can see them doing something like that, too.
Now even more half-naked chicks.
Just hold it in a strip club already.
Yeah.
So true. Okay, so what were the other details they started releasing that...
Something else that they discussed, events, that I thought that was quite interesting. Let's see, let me quote here. Random events are all about giving Civilization IV even more historical flavor and immersion and providing new ways to interact with the world. There are a large number of events that don't occur all in every game, so each game feels unique. Some events simply ask the player how to deal with a situation that has arisen, but others are quite intricate, sending the player on quests in order to receive some reward, for example. Hmm. And that sounds very interesting, especially the quest part.
Ooh.
Yeah, events sound interesting to me, but probably not like make or break feature for me. I mean, the number one thing I hear about events is that they better be optional. Which I can't imagine them not being. You know, if they have major gameplay effects.
Yeah, well, especially for multiplayer, yeah. You have to, make it optional for that. People don't want anything to interfere with pure skill.
Well, no, something like, say...
Yes, because the whining would be epic.
Yeah.
Oh, you only won because you got that quest. You hear it now.
Oh, yeah. And your capital started with, 3 gold next to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's one more excuse to add to the list. But yeah, I mean, events are not really a major thing for gameplay, but they do add a lot of nice atmosphere, especially if there's a great number of them. So you get a couple of them each game, and it makes every game different.
Yeah, now, in Smack, they would have these events, whereas if you had a particular building in your location, I mean, the event was thrown. You know, it rolled the event, and then it could actually have either a good or a bad result, depending on whether you had a particular building in your city.
Yeah.
So, it would roll a plague/population boom event. And if you have a hospital, you get a population boom. If you don't, you get a plague. So it actually rewarded you for having the foresight to build the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if it'll work like that.
And sometimes it would also roll just the plague event or a virus by itself. And if you had a better version of the hospital, it wouldn't break out.
Oh, okay.
So it was a negative event, but you were able to prevent it.
Oh, okay, yeah, nullification, something like that.
Yes.
And then there'd just be things like meteorite impact. You know.
Or the volcanoes later on.
Oh, yeah. But the volcano was kind of good because you got energy from volcanoes. Yeah. Well.
It wasn't good if it happened to come up in the middle of your empire, though.
Hmm. No.
Yeah.
As long as we don't have that going on, because then people would really get upset.
Yeah, and I don't think you can modify the terrain like that. And down the sword.
Just saying.
I do think a big advantage of this, I mean, a lot of people were concerned that events would only be negative, and this is definitely strongly suggesting that there will be positive events as well. So I think a lot of people will be happy about that.
Yeah, I can't see a quest that doesn't give you a payoff, you know. It's like, ooh, quest to get a negative result? I don't think so.
Yeah, no. That doesn't seem likely. But, you know, it's quite possible that there will be, simpler events that just give a simple bonus as well. I mean, like you said, the population boom or something like that.
Okay, what's the other feature?
Alexman listed a few scenarios. Or he mentioned that there would be fantasy scenario, World War II, a Renaissance scenario, and, well, what we already knew, a future scenario. So that's
because of the screenshots that have been released showing
the afterworld thing that was in the design diaries.
Yeah, looks like some kind of alien setting or something. It reminded me of the movie Aliens. That was just what I was saying. Mm. Well, it seems like a pretty broad historical, set of scenarios.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, because in Warlords, the scenarios were pretty much ancient, you know, ancient Greece, ancient China, Mongolia. So it looks like they're really opening it up here to a wider variety of scenario types.
Yep. That sounds interesting.
Not that I play scenarios or anything. Yeah, I tried like the Alexander one like two or three times, and I was like, nah, I just got boring.
Yeah, well, that's not really a good scenario. If you want to give scenarios a good test run, well, really none of the scenarios in that ship with the game by default are really good. The Rise of Rome one is sort of okay, and the Genghis Khan one. But this is surprising, even in the fan community. I haven't seen all that many good scenarios yet.
Yeah, there's a lot of modding, but the modding is almost, like, 90% of it is focused on just regular gameplay, you know?
Yeah.
Random map generated,
yep.
New features thrown in there, new units, buildings, yada, 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 stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just...
a lot of total conversion type mods as opposed to little smaller set pieces.
Well,
yeah.
There's also a lot of smaller mods, but these are just mods that add one save for, you know, one feature.
Yeah, and then there's those huge agglomerations of all those little mods together. It's like, oh, I've added 20 civilizations, 50 buildings, you know, 50 technologies, you know.
Yeah.
It can be a little overkill sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. That's really one thing that's still lacking. I mean, there's the Civ 2 scenario community where there were really hundreds of scenarios to choose from. That's something, hopefully that we'll still get that, and maybe Beyond the Sword can provide some kind of a sort of a kickoff.
Yeah, I think people get caught up in trying to customize their mod, because maybe they want to do scenario, but they get caught up in making all the custom units, and then next thing you know, it's this full-blown huge thing with the 20 civs and the 50 technologies.
Yeah, that's probably a good point.
Well, in Civilization 2, you probably couldn't add... How much of those types of things could you add? New buildings, technologies, yada yada. Were they as easy to add?
In Civ 2, it was fairly easy, but of course it was a fairly simple game, so... I mean, you didn't have... you couldn't define completely new, you know, effects and stuff like that. Mm. I mean, you had what you had.
Well, maybe it's just a change in the focus that people have now, because, like I said, it's 90% is just make... regular game, you know, things, and almost no set-piece battles. But you could really easily do set-piece battles with Python. You could have all kinds of little things popping up and like, oh boy, the cavalry comes out of nowhere, you know, plop, you know.
Oh yeah, you can do a lot of things. I mean, I think it was a very simple and not all that well-polished scenario, but what is it, the World War II scenario that shipped with the default game that I co-designed, that was an excellent example of and what a regular scenario could be like. Now, personally, immediately admit it's not the best one out there, but it's a good example of how that sort of mechanism could work.
Hmm.
But it's not really being copied a lot.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, well, it looks like, you know, certainly there will be a World War II scenario in Beyond the Sword as well, and that looks like it would be something along those lines as well.
Hmm.
You can't really make an RPG version of that or something. So that should be interesting.
Yeah. The other units that were promoted, that did sound pretty interesting. They've confirmed...
Paratrooper...
Privateer.
Privateer, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, well, we had those in Civ 3. Could be nice to have those back again.
Yeah, and they've been modded about a dozen times already, but hey.
But now we have the official version.
Exactly. There's going to be a problem anyway. There's very little that Firaxis could come up with that's not been done by the fans already.
Yeah. Did I tell you guys I did... charismatic trait in original Civ. I totally came up with that.
Well, I believe you.
Oh, well,
though I wonder when you get into those later wars with all the bombers and stuff, if it's going to be sort of, with having paratroopers, if it's going to be like when I was playing Alpha Centauri and I could completely bomb down the city and then just send in drop units.
Oh, yes.
Paratroopers are like drop units and...
Love drop units.
Totally overrunning everyone.
Yeah, I don't know about Alpha Centauri, but in Civ 2, they were definitely strongly overpowered if you did it like that. You could nuke every city and then bring in the paratroopers, and suddenly the entire Civ was gone. I'm sure they will make sure that can't happen again.
Well, it all depends on the range, and then whether they suffer any kind of a weakness, I think, because didn't the paratrooper, the drop units in SMAC, had like minus 50%?
They took damage.
Oh, okay.
They took damage? Oh, yeah, that was it. They took half damage on a drop.
Or something. And then had a reduced strength, I think.
Yeah, but the whole point was just to nuke everything with air units then and just walk them in. They don't even do any fighting.
Yeah, that's the problem that they need to avoid for Civ 4. If they can do that, yeah, it can be a lot of fun.
Oh, and the privateers, I've never played with anything that was a privateer before. Obviously it wasn't in Smack, but I presume the effect here is that they are secret?
Yeah, you can't see the nationality. At least that's how it was in Civ 3. I assume it's going to be the same in Civ 4. And well, that can be a lot of fun. You can attack everyone without anyone ever finding out who you are.
Yeah, that would. You know what would make that much better, though? If naval combat didn't suck in Civ 4.
That's a good point.
Well, there's just no strategic imperative to control the ocean, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And that's something, hopefully, maybe they've looked into that as well, but we haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Now, what I think would work is if the naval units could attack the coastal cities, like, directly. Not just have to carry units, but, you know, could actually fight them somehow.
Well, I guess that could work. Never really thought much about that.
Oh, well. I'll have to mod that in someday. You guys will try it out when I mod it, okay?
Well, we'll see.
Should be simple to do.
If I'm not mistaken, we found out who another one of the leaders was. Boudica of the Celts. Yay.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, that's nice.
Boudica? Is that how you pronounce her?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
I'm happy. I've wanted her in there for a while. I mean, yes, I know there's mods, but it's different when they actually officially do it.
I think I know what Maggie's new avatar will be.
The one that kicks your butt.
Yeah, that's, I think, exactly what Alexman's words were. She kicked them.
Pretty much, yeah.
Aggressive, charismatic, isn't it the combo, I believe?
Mm. Yeah, that should be a good Civ to play with.
So you start off with melee 1, and then with a barracks, that'll give you 3. So you're hitting 2 promotions right off the bat. No, 3? How many is it? And then you got, like, 1 combat, and you'll 1 fight, and you'll get, like, another promotion. So you're going to get some pretty mean units right out the gate there.
Yeah, well, that should be fun. Mm-hmm. Someone to counter the Romans.
That'd be nice. Get all historical. Have the Celts conquer the Romans. Yay!
Yeah, and you have those, you saw that Dune? How do you even, that Celtic unique building now?
Ah, the Dune. Dune.
So you'll add Gorilla to that, is all that as well. So you'll have, like, freaking 6 promotions. What was the other topic? The other thing they revealed? You've got the copy. I can't even look at it anymore.
Well, there's one thing that they mentioned that I thought was rather interesting, although it's a graphics-only improvement. They're going to allow for custom interfaces. So if you're playing in a fantasy scenario, you might have a fantasy background for the menus and stuff like that.
Ooh.
Hmm. Oh, this is like the border areas, the interface kind of stuff?
Yeah, although what's now basically blue. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The blue interface. I think they changed the color in Warlords, didn't they?
No, I don't think it's a different color. I saw some mods where people would make it like a tan-looking interface.
Oh, maybe. That's possible.
That's probably what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
But that'll be really nice.
But is this like you're going to be able to modify the whole thing? So it's going to be like StarCraft, where playing the Zerg, there are all those little twisty-looking things on. If it's a Protoss, they're all blue and yellow. I like that in StarCraft. That'd be slick.
Yeah. Star Trek Birth of the Federation also had that.
Oh.
If you play as a Klingon, she had a whole Klingon background, all these swirly things.
Mm.
Yeah, it's always fun. It doesn't really add anything to the game, but it's just nice, a bit of atmosphere.
Yeah, it helps remind you of who you're playing at the same time. It's like, what race am I again? I forgot, you know?
Yep.
I'm those guys. Or if it took on the color of your civilization automatically.
Yeah, if it did that. I mean, it really mentions here that it only does that for scenarios and mods and stuff like that.
Oh. Mm.
But I imagine you could probably mod it to have a different background for every Civ, but with 40-some Civs, 34, I think, that would be a fair amount of work.
But I bet you it's out by the end of the year.
Yeah, probably. If it's possible, it will definitely be out there.
Yeah, well, I would think the simple thing to do is just to do the color changing. I mean, instead of blue, just go with the color of the Civ. And that's a XML-defined variable, so...
Yeah, that's one variable that's really easy to change.
So it just does it on the fly. No need to actually create 40 different sets of things, do that.
That's true.
Wasn't there another graphic thing they said they were doing?
Yeah, there's Civ-specific graphics of Alex McGoldit.
Now, there's a ton of that being done in mods. In fact, the mod we're featuring later on, it's got tons of it as well. But people are just using...
And the one we had last week also.
Yes, well, like I said, it's become like very popular to do. I think this might be why they're doing it.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
Because they saw everyone was doing this online anyway. So it's like, oh, okay. You know. But everyone has to use the create a new unit technique. You know, it's like,
yeah, it does add a nice, it adds more flavor to the game, because if you're playing, say, Japan or something, you want your games to look like they're actually Japanese or something, as opposed to you don't forget, wait, who am I playing? Somebody with a red color? What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly think the team color is sufficient to distinguish your forces from the enemy. I think it's just cool to have them look different that way.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun and a lot of yet more atmosphere.
Oh, well. Overall, pretty nice little pack of, you know, release info, you know, nice to whet our appetites with.
That's definitely a lot of good stuff.
Okay, now we just want more info. Leak something more.
And to think we weren't supposed to have this.
They were holding out on us.
Well, you have to wonder if they made them release it and pull it just to get us to talk about it.
Ooh.
Conspiracy.
That's sneaky.
Well, to be honest, Strategy Informer isn't exactly the foremost gaming site. Normally, you expect the first types of interviews like this to go to GameSpot and IGN and GameSpy.
Oh, so, a little coup of their own.
Yeah, I was surprised to see them be the first, and of course, not all that surprised to see it being retracted. Oh well, we have it. It's ours now.
All your interviewer belong to us.
Yes.
Well, we got more Beyond the Sword news somewhere.
Yeah.
It's on the Australian version of GameSpot. Release dates. Potential release dates. They're not official.
Unfortunately, those turned out to be wrong.
Ha-ha.
Yeah, it's done when it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought something was wrong with the July 2nd date. That's just way too close to a holiday weekend.
Oh, yeah, in the U.S., that's true, yeah. Didn't occur to me.
Well, maybe they want to sell it on the holiday. Isn't that part of the strategy here? Christmas, New Year's?
Apparently not.
Labor Day?
Because the official release date is July 23.
Oh. Bummer.
Oops.
The problem is that this information came from a retailer, and retailers have a commercial interest in basically lying about release dates.
And getting you to pre-order.
Yeah, exactly, because whoever has the earliest release date gets the most pre-orders. Mm. So they structurally aren't worried, lie about this stuff. But Take-Two released a press release. Well, for us, it's yesterday. It will be a week ago by the time this goes public. That the official release date for the U.S. is July 23rd, and in the rest of the world, it will be out by the end of July, so within a week.
That's still good, though. It's in the middle of the summer up here in the U.S. and in Europe, so people who are, you know, younger people have time to play it before they go back to school.
Yeah.
People in college have time to play it before they go back to school.
Yep, and you'll still have time to read Harry Potter before then. So, yeah, timing is pretty good.
Yeah, so, geeks of the world, your summer is set.
Yeah, you're going to be pretty busy.
Yeah. I can't wait to start modding it.
Yeah. But if you didn't know about the release date, you probably also didn't know about the final box art yet, which is also out.
Okay, let's go look at it. Ooh, it's very red. Whoa, they added mechs? Whoa.
Yeah. Giant death robots!
Woo, robots!
Finally! We've been begging for them for years.
Hooray!
And, guy with suitcase nuke? Is that,
yeah.
I swear that's a guy with a suitcase nuke.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a good idea for him to wear a helmet, too.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd. Everyone is heavily pantsered, and the guy's just walking there.
Yeah, it's like, I'm only carrying a nuclear weapon. I'm not important enough to have arms.
Never mind me.
Okay.
Real
so.
Question is, whose head from Firaxis is that actually? It's got to be somebody. Somebody's walking in the hall. He's got the digital camera. Oh, look, box art.
That's actually a fair point, because I do know that the intro movie for Warlords was actually this guy shouting, and that is actually the sound engineer from Firaxis.
Oh, really?
I had a lot of fun doing that. But I don't recognize this. It doesn't help that you're looking from behind.
No. Any of those new wonders of the world in the background? I see the Sphinx. That's the lighthouse of
Alexandria.
Yeah,
that one was there in the original box art as well.
Yeah, oh, well, you figured they'd put some of those new wonders of the world in the back there. I don't see any of them there.
Yeah, well, they're not the most spectacular ones, maybe.
Okay, and is that the spaceship going off in the distance there? That's always in the middle of the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not the original.
Spaceship looks a little different, though, is it? I'm not getting the sense of it being, you know.
Yeah, well, we had a designer diary on that a couple of episodes back. The new spaceship, and you're going to be able to customize it somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, not bad. I'll have to know what it looks like now when I grab it.
Look for the red box with Silhouette.
Yeah, that big red box.
Almost looks like it's a Civ Mars mod or something.
Yes, Civilization on Mars.
Yeah, that's...
Expansion pack of the game of the year. Shouldn't it be the expansion pack, the sequel, the expansion pack of the peak of the expansion pack of the game of the year?
Probably didn't fit in the circle.
Expansion pack to the bestest game ever?
Expansion pack of the greatest series of games ever in the history of time. Yeah.
Okay, now that's going a little far.
Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Illuminatus, Snoopy369, or Grand Patrol via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
And welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about various hot topics on all the different forums that talk about Civ.
So, what's the first topic? War weariness brings me to tears.
Yeah, because all of us have been there at some point.
That's true.
Actually, to be honest, I don't suffer that much war weariness. I mean, I usually go into pretty short wars anyway, so...
Well, some of us don't do short wars.
And this guy certainly hasn't, because we're talking about a threat started by Frenzy 4, and he says that he's playing in a game in which first Alexandra jumped him, and then Napoleon, and then Shaka, and then Genghis. So, yeah.
Okay, so he's basically just complaining that he's getting dogpiled. I mean, that's
pretty much
a war-weariness problem.
One at a time. Yeah. I mean, if you choose those kind of people as neighbors, you're going to get that. They're not exactly Gandhi. But yeah, I mean, this sort of thing can happen.
I think war weariness, though, is calculated per empire that you're at war with. So if the first war ends, it doesn't transfer over war weariness to the second war. So each one of those is separate. So each time if you were to get peace with one of the three or four that was against you, you'd get a reduction in your total war weariness. I think that's how the code works.
The problem is, if you have a game like that, when you have such aggressive neighbors, you probably are just getting all dogpiled on at once, and then you have massive war weariness.
Yep.
Yeah, true. There's no way for you to get any peace with it. Unless you're using aggressive AI settings, then they'll usually sign peace with you if you're not just totally losing to them, like, badly.
Or if you have some particular resource that it's their goal to capture, then they also won't sign with you either.
Yeah, that was pointed out in Threat as well. Everyone is attacking you, you're probably a target. And, well, I think one of the easiest way to get over that is to build a strong military. It'll make it a lot less attractive for people to attack you.
Yes. Low power rating is the number one reason the AI attacks you. I mean, I think that's more important than your overall score. I mean, they realize, you know, oh, this guy's got a high score, but his power sucks. You know, he's an easy target.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like where someone has gone all builder mode.
Yes.
Yep. They've got lots of juicy cities, but nothing to protect them. So that's definitely something to look into. What was also pointed out in the thread, and I think was very clever, you don't get war weariness if you're only defending your own territory, or at least you get very little of it. So maybe you shouldn't go on quite so many wars of conquest and let the enemy come to you.
The flip side of the coin where you're the one dogpiling on everyone?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, presumably those wars where, you know, you're participating in a dogpile, they don't last long because, you know, that civ crumbles and it's you just want to get a little piece of it before it's all taken up by someone else. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, just hold it out. You know, I mean, like, tough it out and get what you can. You know, it's better to be the dog pile O than the dog pile E.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Or you can always resort to Dan's world builder strategy.
Yeah, that's very efficient.
Dan Foreman. Oh, wait. He copyrighted that. Lucutus, now that you've cooled, you know, can I take the Danaforming copyright? Overturn the copyrights on Danaforming?
No, they're mine now.
Oh, he seizes the intellectual property rights of his conquered foe.
It's all mine. Muhahaha.
You need to work on your evil laugh, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm new to this.
So the summary lesson there is, don't let your power fall too far or you're really going to be hurting.
Top 10 tips to get started in Civ.
We should have shown Dan this thread before he left.
Yeah, this would be so great for Dan.
That's true. But it is interesting also who started the thread. It's apparently someone from 2K, in the UK office. And they have some kind of magazine. They want to feature some tips in for beginning Civ players.
www.2kedition.com, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So it looks to me like this is actually something produced by 2K Publishers? Is that the... It's got their little logo on it.
Yeah, it's by 2K itself, the 2K UK office.
So it's a little self-promotional kind of thing. Hmm.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the existence of this magazine either.
Hmm. Me neither. Never heard of it. I always just read PC Gamer. It's like, come on. You know, these big percentages, you know. Don't give me this thumbs and stars crap, you know.
So, top 10 tips to get...
What are some of the ones you like?
Yeah, what tips that you guys would give to a new player?
Well, there's already one here in the second post in the thread. It's something we just basically touched on. Is never leave a city defended for a long period of time and constantly look at the military rating.
Yep, that's definitely a good advice. I would say technology-wise, a very good advice is if you have mysticism, go for religion first. And if you don't bother.
Well, don't bother if it's a game of more than about 10 civs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also helps. If you only have 4 opponents.
If you're doing a 6 or so, around there, under 6, I still go for it, even if I don't have mysticism. Of course, immediately stop if someone gets, like, the one you're aiming for, Buddhism, Hinduism.
Well, usually don't even bother then. I'll just go for one of the later religions.
What else is good here? Keep the barbarians off your land. Oh, okay. Good idea.
You should carefully look at early wonders you're building to make sure that they're worth the time you're going to spend where you could be building settlers and expanding your empire instead.
Yeah, I think probably the most important thing is to expand at the right rate. Not too fast, not too slow. It's got to be very well-timed and to pick the best, most optimum expansion points, you know, city locations.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Especially someone who's coming from a Civ 2 or Civ 3, you'll have to learn to...
Settler spam will not help you.
No. That's not a good idea.
Oh, catapults. Catapults own all, basically. That's pretty true.
Siege units, period, basically. Doesn't matter what area you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though, ironically, I very rarely use those new trebuchets they added. Everyone was like, oh, trebuchets are going to be so cool in Warlords, and like... Yeah, it's just a bigger catapult.
Well, if you have a medieval unique unit or something and you get a later start on the warmonger, you may not have built any catapults and you just go straight into trebuchets and they're a little bit better, so.
Yeah, true.
They have their use. They have a spot.
Okay. Well, another good diplomacy tip is don't try to get along with everyone. That's not going to work. So pick a few friends, especially if they have the same religion as you, and stick with those.
Yeah.
Doubly so if they're the same religion and your neighbors.
That's even better.
Yeah, it's pretty much a safe front so you don't get into two front wars. And then, slavery. Whip, you know, whip everything.
And a corollary to that, food.
Yeah.
Agriculture should be the next thing after a religion.
That's true, definitely.
Yeah.
And early workers.
But not too early. I mean, you want to make sure they have something to do.
Yeah, you don't want to do that maybe the first thing, but maybe before your first settler even sometimes.
Yeah, if you do not have any technology that allows any kind of useful improvement, then research that first, unless perhaps you've got the chance for the early religion, in which case you might go for that first.
Yeah, it a lot depends on your starting situation, but normally mysticism, if you have that, then religion is the first thing to go for. And otherwise, it's indeed a worker tax and a resource revealing tax. Those are also important.
Because you don't want to accidentally put your city right on top of your bronze.
No. Well, that's not even so terrible.
I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it's not optimal, though.
But the most important thing is to know where the bronze is to begin with. You don't want to expand north if your bronze is south.
Yep.
Same for iron if you happen to be Rome.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think those are some good tips. I don't know if we have any more.
Promote your units when you've got the chance, if they've got experience. But if they don't have any experience and they're just like, yeah, you know, like combat one guys, it's like, yeah, don't bother.
Yeah.
But upgrade anything that's got like 2-3 promotions. At least that's just my personal philosophy. They don't make the cut. They just sit in the city doing police duty for, you know, a couple thousand years. And it's, oh, I've got that warrior, you know. Oops, infantry coming, you know.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade later, and it doesn't actually cost you any more, because you're only being charged for the difference between this level and the next. You know? So, you know, same amount of money total to just wait and defer the upgrade for 3,000 years.
That's true. You basically upgrade those units when you have the money.
Or you're desperate.
And it might actually be cheaper just to build a new modern unit.
Yeah, that's probably true also.
Yeah, because it's research, 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 screw gold.
So what are your Civ playstyle idiosyncrasies? Another thread from CFC.
Okay. I really like this first one that's posted up here from Silver 2039. Raise every single conquered city to the ground. Destroy every single enemy built improvement. Just complete scorch their earth policy down to even the roads.
Yeah. You know, anger much?
I'm destroying size 18 cities with 3 wonders in them. Raise. It's like, oh. Okay.
Someone has issues.
Genocide everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just the other way around. I can never get myself to raise cities. I hate doing that. Sometimes you have no choice, especially with those crappy cities sitting in the middle of an ice field.
Crap locations, yeah.
I have no problem raising those. But any half-decent city I'll try to keep and build something beautiful from it.
Yes. These things like always renaming your opponent's cities after you capture them, things like that. Or never renaming them.
Okay.
Little things like that.
I never really renamed them.
I would do that in the past, but I've just gotten lazy. Don't bother to do it.
Yeah, in the really, really early days back in Civ 1, I used to do that. I used to name them on the Earth map after the closest real city that was in that location.
Mm-hmm. Get that too.
But I don't really play on Earth maps anymore, so kind of went away.
Yeah, one of my things is I've been sitting there using the drawing tool in there to plan out where I want cities, and then AI will come and put one just one square off of where I want it.
Yes, I hate that. But that's not your idiosyncrasy. That's...
And even if it's a good city, even if it's grown some, I'll go through and raise it and put the city where I wanted it.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
I'm probably not the only one that does that.
Because the city's AI placement is really not so good.
Well, with Blake's, it's a little bit better.
True.
It happens less often now.
True, true.
But sometimes the AI can't see the longer picture of that if you moved it down, one, it would get more food and still have all the resources.
Yeah. I think it pays a little too much attention to not having overlap between the city radiuses.
Yeah, you mean when they're like 5 and 6 squares apart?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I mean, really, really far.
Oh, I always leave my opponents with one measly little city, preferably left on some tiny remote desert island, so I can gloat and make arrogant demands for the rest of the game.
That's fun, especially when it's somebody like Montezuma, you know. Just leave, I'm going to cash you out on the Survivor Island. Have fun.
Let me see, if I can think of my idiosyncrasies. I almost never build workshops because they produce -1 food, and I hate that.
Yeah, I do the same. Never build those things.
Yeah, they don't really produce a whole lot of hammers either way. I mean, for the net effect.
No, I mean, you can wonder if that's really an idiosyncrasy or if it's just common sense.
Yeah, I've modded them to take off the minus food, but increase like the build time to like 16 turns or something like this. Kind of remind me of boreholes. Now, of course, the most damaging idiosyncrasy that anyone can possibly do is to never whip. You know, there's lots of people, oh my god, I don't believe in slavery.
Well, that was me until I played this one game over, set game thing over at Realms Beyond, where you were Rome, and there was you were on Deity with the large map and raging barbarians, and you had no neighbors and this huge swath of land around the capital. I learned how to whip, believe me.
That sounds like fun.
Well, it was definitely a learning experience. Learning that, oh yeah, whipping, that can actually be helpful. I used to say that too about, I don't like slavery. Well, they don't like being part of another empire either, because they won't be as nice.
You don't like slavery? How do you like death?
Exactly.
Oh, someone who won't chop down jungles.
I'm chopping. I know I should chop more, but my forests are so pretty.
Oh, but I couldn't chop down that beautiful rainforest.
It's my nice little capital with a lush forest around. And then I wonder why I get beat to certain wonders and stuff.
Yeah.
I can do it when it's along a river because I know I can put a cottage there and that would be better. But when it's elsewhere, I'm like, well, I don't have to, do I?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same, I have to say. I don't like the job. I'll only do it if it's needed for a wonder or whatever.
Although, oddly enough, I have no problem mass clearing the rainforests.
No. No problems there.
Yeah, slash and burn, slash and burn. No,
Amazon Basin? What Amazon Basin?
Yeah. So, in this week's workshop, we're going to talk about Amra's mod pack, which Impaler chose for the topic. Maybe you can tell a little bit about it?
Yes, Amra's been making this mod pack since original Civilization. It's been expanded now with Warlords. The main features consists of lots and lots of new civilizations, really high-quality ones. They feature full animated leader heads by Amra and other artists, got ethnically diverse units, much like found in Total Realism, enhanced advisor interface, other little bits of Python interface changes that are popular, do new resources, lots of things like lemons, cotton, coffee, etc., buildings, wonders, and improvements, technologies. Recent version included 5 additional religions, which are pretty nice to play with if you really like a lot of religions, and like a really big game, perhaps. Promotions, unit formations, city names, great people, modification that pops up a little interface, a little picture of each great person and gives you a little quote by them. Really nice to add a little historical flavor to the game. And quite a number of source code modifications as well that do new cool things. I think they're going to be adding in the Inquisitors again. Again, a lot of this stuff is shared between other modifications. There's almost nothing here that's completely original that you can't find anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's just this compilation of everything is his unique bit.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, the key thing about this mod. It's not really one mod, it's really a compilation of a lot of small mods, which is useful if you're not very techy yourself and you don't want to put together your own mod from all these different incompatible, for the most part, components.
Yeah, the amount of time required would be like hundreds of hours to put all that stuff together.
Yeah.
So the total number of leaders is like 60 or 70 now? It's huge.
Yeah, very, very large, and a lot of saves, and that's, along with some other things, my biggest problem with this mod. I think the basic mod is very good. It's very nice, especially if, like I said, you don't want to put together your own mod. But it goes a little bit overboard in adding stuff. There's just so many saves, and you can end up, if you play with random opponents, you end up playing in one game against the Tibetans, the Brittany, Scythians, and the Majapahitans. I doubt that a lot of people will have heard of all of these saves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them get a little abstract or
Yeah, obscure for the most part.
I mean, that's what I was looking for. Okay, well, we've got, it's got Canada, so we know Dan will love it.
I was going to point that out.
Yeah.
Oh, but it only has 1 liter for Canada versus the version with 5. So I think he might not like that. Okay, got Dutch.
Yeah, and there was a few little things in there, like there's the smiley faces next to the leader, so you can tell at a glance.
Yeah, that's
yes,
absolutely. Some of the UI improvements are quite nice. Also, the combat stats. There's a big screen with combat stats. It's very nice.
Yeah, that's done with a Python system. It reports the statistics.
Yep.
Out to Python, and they're kept so that you can see what the bravest unit, the most traveled unit, the oldest unit, all these little statistics that are just nice to have.
And all these little gameplay improvements and also the ethnically diverse buildings and ethnically diverse units. I kind of like that stuff, but it goes overboard with the civs and also with the units. There's a lot of new units in there. And every civ had, like, I think 2 or 3 unique units. That's
Actually, he says there's the style units, which are just graphical alterations, which have to be done with a clone unit.
Yeah.
But as far as actual unique game stats, he's upped it to 2 unique units for every civ. But that's it.
Yeah, and I think in that case, it's also going overboard. If you have really great ideas for the units, maybe. But if you look at some of the units, you have the Aboriginal Warrior, the Ansar Warrior, the Bull Warrior, the Viet Warrior, the Impi Warrior, and you have Hussar Cavalry.
Yeah, not everyone has something interesting and interestingly unique like the Mayan Plumed Warrior.
Yeah.
That's Plumed Archer, sorry. That's a good one. But
That's a good one, but I counted something like a dozen different cavalry units. There's 6 or 7 different archers, a lot of different warriors.
Yeah, it gets confusing.
It gets confusing, and B, what part of the word unique unit do you not understand? It's not really, there's a lot of different graphics, which is nice, but it gets very confusing, especially if you combine that with the ethnically diverse units that this also has. You get lost in this melee of units, and you have to just look at the stats to see what you're working with, because you can't memorize this stuff anymore.
Yeah, that can be a bummer.
If you cut down on things a little bit, just have 1 unique unit and maybe reduce the number of different ethnic styles a little bit, get rid of some of the new civs, I think this could be a very good mod. It just goes a little bit overboard with some of the stuff it adds.
Well, I love stuff like this. It can almost never be too much for me.
Yeah, it's really for a small group of people that are really into this, probably.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of players, this is not really for them.
Now, they include a nice Civilopedia here. It's an expanded, modified form. It's got all of your high-level options here to the left side and a big scroll bar, which stays there the whole time. You click on that, and then you get a secondary list here, so you can very quickly go directly to the thing you want.
Yeah, that's a very nice system. That's definitely true.
And this is, again, a standard for practically everyone who makes mods uses this.
Yeah, a lot of people do this. That's true.
And another little UI thing that I liked is on the upper left, where you're normally getting all your notices about units fighting and things like that, but there's also notices for the trade routes every turn and for when cities grow to a certain size, because sometimes you might be on another part of the map and you might miss that when you need to go back and stop them from growing.
Definitely something that's a very good thing. I love to see that. Although, again, you get so much information that it becomes a bit unwieldy. Mm. And what I'd really like to see, not just for a mod, but also for the main game, is to have a proper manager where you can select different types of messages that you'd like to see.
I think I've seen some mods that work on that system of a Python callback system with an init file, so you can turn on and off specific types of pop-ups. See.
Exactly. That's really something that you need, because this is really useful information. It's great to have, but it becomes so much that it becomes just hard to work with. That's definitely something I'd like to see more of.
Now, what do you think of all the resources that have been added? We got cotton.
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's a pretty good selection of resources.
Lemons, natural gas.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was one thing that is not overboard, because sometimes I, even playing basic Civ, I keep going, well, where's this and this? Because there's other resources they didn't put in that were historically important.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, you do have to keep in mind a little bit that you don't add too much stuff, but the choice of resources are indeed very good.
Yeah, like salt.
Get salt.
How can they not have salt?
Yep, salt is very important. Hemp was also very, very important.
Ah.
Tobacco, coffee.
Tobacco, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's even a couple of major resources that I would say are missing. But as I said, I mean, if you add more than what's in here now, you're probably going overboard. So I think that was definitely a good way to go.
Good Wonders of the World as well. Adam Smith's Trading Company.
I didn't even really look at those. Let's see, what did they add?
Things like the King's Saga from one of those scenarios. Copernicus Observatory, or is the Plato's Academy. Oh yeah, the Sphinx, that's a nice one too.
The Sphinx?
Causes no anarchy.
Mm, yeah.
None of them are new abilities, they're just combinations of things that have other effects, you know, like more trade routes. What did that, the SETI program, I think that gave you more spaceship production.
Mm.
So it just kind of stacks with things that are already there.
Well, it's not a bad selection.
And of course they have shrines for the new religions, you know, Abu Simbel for the Egyptian religion, something for Zoroastrianism I've never heard of.
I probably know what you mean, but don't ask me to pronounce it.
Yeah, the Uber the Blube. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, the thing from Mesoamerican religion looks pretty cool, though. Did you see it? Earth Temple.
I don't think...
I don't know that I did. I should have been paying attention because I was playing the Maya.
It's this giant head with like a river coming out of the mouth. You know, that's some nice artwork.
Yeah, some of the artwork is really nice. Some of the leaders, the basically very lightly skinned version of some existing leader. But some of it is really good.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, some of the leaders are like, really, you can't even tell which one they came from, which guy they, put a hat on and stuff like that.
Yeah, you have to look a little harder to see. Now, who was that?
And it's one more reason to not just go overboard and add 40 or 50 leaders. Just take the ones that you can make look really good.
Yeah, like this one, Sobieski of the Polish Empire.
Yeah, that looks really
like,
good.
Who is that? You know, it's like he looks completely unique. If I didn't know better, I'd say it was like Vraxis made him or something.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Aborigine leaders made from Gandhi, they look pretty nice. Well, of course, a lot of them suffer from bad animations, you know, where they've combined an animation with a leader head that really doesn't work with it. And, you know, like their hand goes through their head and stuff like this. You know, or when like their shoulder moves, like their, you know, like the shoulder blade like comes out and projects forward, you know. Dislocation.
Yeah, I think, like I said, we can conclude. And I think it's basically the basic mod is quite good. But it would be nice to remove some of the fluff that's in there, some of the units, some of the civs. But other than that, it's a very nice mod.
Okay. This is one Night Owls has been listening yet, blah blah. Yes, there are people who listen to Polycast. Ooh, cool. One of our fans.
Yay!
Yes, worship us.
Yeah, and Night Owl, this is not the first time Night Owl has sent something in, I think. So he's actually a regular listener, it seems.
Hmm. Maybe we should have him on.
Repeat listeners, woohoo!
Woo! Yeah, he has a couple of really interesting comments on what we discussed the last episode about state property as a civic. He has to say the following. Sometimes on a small and mostly middle-sized empires where you have a city near a huge river, I'd like to create a production city from watermills and workshop improvements as I get a food bonus from the SP civic.
State property.
That's the state property, yeah.
Okay. It sounds like a viable strategy.
I've never actually tried it, but yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea, actually.
Especially if you were in an area that, if you had a lot of river and grassland areas, it didn't have a lot of hills or forests to them.
Exactly. If you have a lot of hill territory, that's not really worth pursuing. But if you're stuck in flatland, it's a good way to get some production going.
Yeah, well, if you've already got a city like that, its terrain kind of naturally tends to lead towards a more food-centric, you know, style. So early on, you're getting massive food and whipping.
Yeah.
And getting all your production that way. And then later, it's a specialist city. Great people farm.
Yeah, but eventually, you still need a production in the late game.
Yeah.
So I can see how it might work if you have a lot of forest and a lot of terrain where you can build workshops.
Yeah, I mean, if you're really into heavy industry as you're, you know, to grind your opponents up, you know, then, yeah, you can go that. Your hill cities are industry, and then even your floodplains and your flatlands are industrial as well. So it's kind of like an all-out industry, I guess, idea.
Yeah, or if you just don't have any hills, you want to have at least one city that can produce some units.
Well, even early game.
So yeah, it's not really something you want to do in every game, I think.
Well, I like the whole principle of whipping out everything from food. So it's like you just convert food to hammers if you don't have hammers.
Yeah, if you can do that, that's definitely probably a better way to go.
But this might be a viable alternative for that type of city once it's later in the game and slavery is not as appealing anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly. Or also in an area with tundra that doesn't have any hills. Because you're going to need some production even just to get lighthouse or something going.
Mm.
Usually you're not doing tundra cities until later in the game when you do have watermills and workshops available.
Mm.
That's true.
So like plant the tundra city and then work the inland workshops to build up enough hammers to get a lighthouse and then just fish from there.
Fish and gold.
To build up the population.
Yep.
Yeah. Fish whipping, you know. Get the fish in and then whip, you know.
Fish slap.
Whip the sea, you know.
Trout slap, trout slap. I see he was also talking about the economy problem with Japan and Tokugawa. Because he had the idea of playing the mercantile civic, which I hadn't thought of. Because usually if you're in a game with him, you want to go to war and be aggressive. You're not going to be trading with a lot of neighbors.
Yep.
I think he's referring to...
Well, I think, yeah, I thought at first that that was what he meant as well, but I don't think that's what he means.
Well, he also...
By merchant economy, he means great merchants. He wants to pump out a lot of great people and make sure they're merchants.
But you...
And that is probably a good idea.
You just cash them in for gold bomb.
Yeah, and you can go... And that's actually what I did in one of the games. I remember later, that's how I had kept myself afloat. It's because I had managed to get the Great Lighthouse.
Hmm.
And then there's also the Colossus later. So, but you could still combine the two. You could go with the mercantile civic and, or, yeah, and then also build a great merchant city.
Yeah, that's definitely true as well.
Yeah, so it's the combination of running merchants in a lot of your cities for just raw gold output and the gold bombs that basically keeps your economy afloat and allows you to devote more of your commerce to research to keep you from getting totally nailed on technology.
Yep.
Because anything that produces gold is really just a way to compensate and make more research.
Yeah, that's true.
That's unfortunately how the game works.
But you also need gold to pay for your maintenance, so at some point you just need a certain amount of gold.
Yeah, but to accumulate gold for other things never works for me.
Yeah, no, that's not really worth it, no.
Only a little bit of upgrading, you know, along the way. But besides that, research is just too important.
Yep.
And he says raise everything. Yeah, that's usually a good idea.
And at some point, it is a good strategy.
Especially when you can't afford to keep it.
And also pillaging, that's something I tend to forget a lot, but that's definitely a good way to get a lot of money.
Yeah.
Especially towns.
Pillage.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe my civic work is...
If you
I don't pillage much.
Is your civic idiosyncrasy?
Yeah. Only if I really know.
That's a good strategy for when you have a place that's really heavily defended and you can't... You know that you're going to be sacrificing too much to go up against it.
Yep.
So just pillage it.
That's definitely a good way to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Especially towns. Those are always the best to pillage.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks, Night Owl, for your feedback. Definitely some good points in there.
Wow.
It's true.
Yeah, we got mail.
And it wasn't spam.
That was the other surprise.
Call in today in North America, 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-PAULI. In Europe, 44
404-20-7871-7659. That's 404-20-7871-Pauly. Or Skype us directly through using Skype from Skype.com. Direct your calls to the Pollycast.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on the show, including how to write in, where to find the official Pollycast forum, and how to subscribe to the RSS feed, log on to the official Pollycast website at pollycast.apolton.net. Type more quietly.
Yeah,
man.
Seriously.
That is nasty.
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
Alright, I think it's about time to wrap this thing up. Good show this week.
Okay, signing off.
Yep, this has been Locutus and Impaler.
Goodbye.
And Maki.
Bye, Maki. Oh, wait. Somebody had to do the comedy option.
That was another show. Bye.
Recorded May 11, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and Civilization IV Warlords. Copyrights 2007. Apolloton Civilization site at apolloton.net.